Welcome to On, Cultivating Student Engagement in Higher Ed. I'm your new host, Lauren Kelly, an instructional designer in UDIT Academic Technology Services. This reimagined podcast provides teaching perspectives related to instructors and students with a shift toward how technology and innovation add value to teaching and learning. This podcast focuses on innovative strategies and support services available to you, regardless of course modality. The concept of grading is definitely not a new strategy when assessing student learning, but specifications grading is. According to Dr. Linda Nielsen, the traditional higher education grading method is broken, and specifications grading offers a solution with benefits for both faculty and students. Other pioneers of specifications grading, along with Nielsen, are Susan Bloom, the author of Ungrading, Alfie Cohn, Robert Talbot, and Celeste Leander. This is a special podcast. The first part of the episode will focus on the perspectives from the College of Engineering faculty and their work with specifications grading. The second half of this podcast will focus on the perspectives of specs grading and the challenges that can come with it. That experience will be shared later on from a faculty member who is with the Alfred Lerner College of Business and Economics. Our hope is that by exploring both sides of the argument for and perhaps against specifications grading, that you, as our listeners, will be provided with a holistic picture of this type of assessment. Welcome to this podcast. Please share a little about your teaching at UD and your background.
Thank you. I'm Nazim Karaja, and I'm a data engineer at University of Delaware. I help human subject researchers collect and manage their data. And before that, I was a lawyer. And before that, I grew up in Italy. I also teach ethics and computer engineering at University of Delaware.
My name is Sheldon Hewlett. I'm an assistant professor of material science and engineering at UD. I teach intro courses in material science, and I also teach junior labs. I'm originally from New Jersey, and I'm really happy to be here today.
My name is Julie Karen. I'm an assistant professor in biomedical engineering at UD. And Sheldon, I didn't know we had so much in common. I grew up in New Jersey too, although I focus my attention now on global work. So I have experience with engineering curriculums in the Northeast of the US. I lived in Washington State, and I also had the opportunity to live and work in South Africa and Tanzania.
Wow, that is really awesome.
Yeah.
Such rich backgrounds. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for being here. So before we dive into your experiences about specifications grading, I thought it might be kind of fun for us to take a step back and reflect on what we experienced with grading when we were college students, even in grade school, let's just say perhaps. What was that like for you? Was grading really stressful and anxiety-ridden like it is now? Let's talk about some of those experiences and what that looked like for us.
Sure. So I grew up in a very education-focused household and also community. So my school system from day one was all about grades and performance and exams. And, you know, part of that is really great because I think it prepared me for life and the future education I was going to go into. But it was stressful. I remember that we separated for math in third grade, and it was all based off of, like, at that point, what you had memorized of your multiplication tables. And I think that that got this like grit inside of me, but also anxiety around grading and kind of being assessed for different, really anything.
That's interesting. Because I also was very privileged to grow up with a mother and a father who were both teachers. The difference in my experience is that as I moved around a ton when I was a kid, my mom moved frequently. I really was never a good student. I flunked a grade in high school. I dropped out of college for a while. For me, trying to deal with assessments was something that I had as a kid internalized as, oh, it's just going to tell me if I'm a good or a bad person. In a way, really kind of heartbreaking at times. I never developed good study habits as a child. And it was very difficult for me to come at learning, again, as an older person, when I was more motivated to, you know, get a law degree and do other things in academia, to develop those habits and understand how to learn.
I have actually somewhat similar backgrounds to both Julie and Nazim. My mother is a teacher and my dad's a doctor, but he runs a residency program. So essentially he's an educator as well. I've had kind of education in the family for a long time. And I also grew up in a very, in an area where, you know, we kind of had a pretty rigorous elementary, middle school, high school program. The idea was that you know, grades were really important, and grades were the thing that sort of dictated where you went in life, more or less. To that end, I did actually pretty well in school. I was a pretty good student. I went to MIT for my undergrad, which was, you know, an achievement I was very proud of. And when I got there, I started to realize that those grades I was getting before maybe didn't quite match to what I was actually learning. I sometimes felt as though like the grades I was getting either weren't quite reflective of what I thought I had learned or how I felt about the subject matter. On either sides of things, sometimes I felt like the grade was like, well, I'm glad I got that grade, though I don't know if I really earned it. And there are other times when I was like, man, I think I should have gotten an A because I really feel like I understand this. I didn't. It kind of happened both ways, especially in higher education, that grading is somewhat ambiguous sometimes. My experience with grading has always been to sort of shrug and accept it. Like, well, that's what it is, I guess. That's kind of led me to where I am now, where I'm trying something new in grading.
I was just going to kind of reflect on the fact that it seems like you both had questioning about grading when you were in school. I did not. I guess because I was doing great and I was given the tools on how to study and how to perform well on tests and projects. I've always just been like that straight A kid who dumps time into my classwork and never really questioned that I deserved the A, like, you know, from my own standpoint. But I did grow up learning how to deal with that system. I remember from a very young age, my dad taught me what I now know is distributed practice, where he would be like, okay, you have two different tests this week. I want you to study for 20 minutes on this. And then you're going to flip to a different subject and do 20 minutes on this. Then you're going to flip to another subject, do 20 minutes on this. I just kind of did everything that I was told by adults, and then it worked. And I never really questioned it.
Credit to your adults then, because they seem to have done an amazing job.
My dad told me to do distributed practice, but for piano. As far as studying was like, well, study until you get it, right? Like that was more or less what it was.
Where are your flashcards?
That's how he functions. He functioned that way. And my mom too, to some degree, she was very much like a sit down and do it. And so I've actually found distributed practice works well for me actually too, when I'm trying to learn something new. That's very interesting.
That is very interesting. Thank you for sharing your experiences. Sheldon, did you want to say something else?
I think when you're looking at sort of highly achieving students, grades actually sometimes typically do kind of match to their expectations, right? Because that's the very top. So it's easy to match the top of a layer to the top of a layer, no problem. In Julie's case, she never really questioned grades because her grades were high and she was able to do all the things that she was expected to do. And so there was a connection there for her. I feel like at lower, you know, for lower tier students or students who are maybe having trouble in the class or maybe not achieving as well, that's where the gray areas really start to come in. One of the reasons I think this discussion could be quite useful to somebody who's trying to, you know, really get a capture kind of the level of performance of students at all tiers throughout the class. Of course, we use tiers as a sort of general term just to mean level of abilities, not a judgment on the student's part.
So that's actually a thing that I struggle with in teaching a lot. And the adjunct faculty, I think, in this group, it's something that I'm still very much learning how to do. One of the things that I feel most guilty about is not focusing enough on the high performing students. Really, I constantly find myself plagued by the middle and low performing students to make sure to catch them up and to kind of bring them up to speed where they're able to like engage the class in a meaningful way. Yeah, I just feel tremendously guilty that I spend very little time focusing on rewarding or even like helping the high performing students achieve, you know, new heights. This is an area where I think specs grading might work out really well. Like the idea that, so students have one of the main skills I think students struggle with is learning how to manage their time. And the idea that in specs grading, you can look at the assignments as a list of tasks and that your grade depends basically on how many of those tasks you check off, giving yourself permission to not do all the tasks. That's actually something I'm specifically playing in my class this semester, where I have one kind of bundle of readings that are assignments on Canvas, in which I heavily advertise continuously the fact that I drop about close to 20 of them, 20 of the lowest scores that the students do. So students should feel free to not do those readings that they're less interested in, or if they don't have the bandwidth to do those readings in that time. I'm not sure it's a successful experiment yet. I think I'm going to know at the end of the semester, but so far it seems to be working out well, that students are finding ways to say, okay, I'm just going to do this one and not that one.
you definitely touched on what you think specifications grading is, which I think is a great segue for our listeners that might not know anything about specifications grading and how each of you defines it in your classrooms.
I'm happy to learn what Julie and Sheldon think about this, because my wife bought the specs grading book by Nielsen a while ago, and she was kind of surprised to see me crack it open and start reading it. The elements that I kind of grokked out of it were that there's a framework that students are presented in which they have assignments as a set of pass-fail tasks. That there's no, and each assignment is not graded from an A to F, you know, scale. The students are graded ultimately at the end of the course based on how many tasks they successfully completed, and are given a certain amount of opportunities to kind of repeat certain assignments if they wish to. They're given the opportunity to kind of fix or readdress assignments that they did not pass, so to speak. That's the bulk of my understanding of specs grading, and I'm hoping that you guys can educate me a little bit more about this.
Yeah, so I think you're totally right in the clear cut what is defined by Nielsen. Although I think some of that starts to lean into what's called like mastery grading, where you take small little chunks of what I want someone to walk away from the class with, and you have them have multiple opportunities to have that thing be assessed, and they only need to perform a certain number of times to show that they have that piece of knowledge. But I guess I kind of do a hybrid specifications grading. I teach specifications grading, or I use specifications grading in two of my classes, a biostatistics class and a cell physiology class, both of which are pretty concrete right or wrong classes, right? There's no, I mean, we can debate some things, but pretty much for statistics, which is my most recent class using it, it's right or wrong. It's a number. You come up with a p-value. That's a lot harder to put into a completely pass-fail system. For example, if someone does a math problem and that takes them 30 minutes and they forgot one negative in one place, technically that would be a fail, right? Of all of the work that they showed. I don't necessarily see that as a fail. I see that they chose the right type of test, that they're doing the right types of equations. I think that for at least my classes, it would be too harsh to be like, you know, you forgot a negative once 20 minutes ago, therefore you failed this whole examination. So I actually use a mix where I do have requirements for my students, but they are based off of a traditional grading scheme scale. So it's kind of a mesh that I think allows them to not be too thrown off. They still get percentages on exams, for example. They'll get a 90 or an 85 or a 65, and each of those numbers fall into a bucket, or what I call a bundle. So they have to have their exams all fall in to the A bucket for them to be able to get an A in the class. So all their exams would need to be a 90% or higher. It has helped a lot in that a 90 is the same as a 92, is the same as a 97. So you don't get a lot of like, hey, how come I got half a point off here? Because it literally doesn't matter. But I do have thresholds that aren't pure pass fail in my class.
I do something similar to Julie, actually. So I, for the very same reasons, so we're both in engineering and we both sort of teach classes. I teach intro to material science. That's where I use specification grading the most. And I found that like penalizing students for small math errors is not something that I really want to do. I do think that, you know, getting the math right is an important part of your engineering practice, but also, you know, failing a whole assignment because you missed a one or you've got the negative or whatever also seems excessively harsh. So I use a set of averages very similar to the way Julie does it, where I have essentially for every sort of assignment bundle that I have in the class, there's a sort of a spec you can meet for each grading scheme, A, B, C, whatever the case may be. The thing that I think matches with specification grading is that I set a benchmark for my homeworks, for example. If you want a homework to count towards anything at all, it has to be at an 80% or 75%, whatever I decide it is in that given semester. So right now, I think I set that at 75%. And then on top of that, I also say, if you want an A in this class, you want to have to demonstrate mastery, an X number of homeworks have to be at 90% or better, right? So that means that more than the majority of these homeworks, you've put in an enough effort and you've really been careful about your work that you are able to achieve, like, you know, at least 90% or better on these assignments. So it allows students to sort of choose where they're going to go. But I also tend to push students toward the higher achieving side. Like I'm using specification gradings less to give students a choice and more for my own sense of assessment, and also kind of hopefully push the whole class towards higher achievement, and hopefully, one would hope, better retention of the material.
I have a question. I come at this as an adjunct, so I have a normal job that occupies the bulk of my waking hours, and then I come and do this job, which is teaching ethics to computer science students and hopefully future programmers. One of the things that I struggle with in trying to find any semblance of a work-life balance is that going through those kind of intense math problems or mathy problems requires really human eyes. And like, it seems to me like a huge time sink. And I should say, as a mediocre student, I really appreciate you guys taking that time, because I think it's hard for students to otherwise achieve any kind of mastery or expertise in their subjects. I think the detailed feedback that you offer is extremely helpful to the students. But in terms of your personal workload, how, or your TA's workload, you know, how does that impact your life? How does that impact your work? This is something I'm very curious about in, you know, people who are full-time professional teachers and educators.
In terms of grading, I am lucky enough to have people who help with grading and teaching assistance for most of my classes. But in terms of their own workload, I don't think having specifications grading would change their workload. If anything, it makes it a little bit better, because with traditional grading, I would still have to score an exam with a percentage. So it's the exact same answer key. If a problem is worth 20 points on an exam, they still have an answer key of, you know, what it means to take off 1 point here and 2 points here. And that answer key has been the same. And so that's actually why I decided to keep my percentages, is I haven't changed any of my assessment. So all of my assessment tools are the same and my rubrics are the same. It's that now, instead of, you know, there being a difference between an 87 and an 85, an 85 is a B and an 87 is a B plus, to me, that is the same grade. An 85 and an 87 are both Bs. And then, you know, they get marked down as a B, and it goes from there. So it's a little bit better, I think, for the graders, because especially new graders who come into the field, they're like, oh, do I take off like 2 points for this, or do I take off 1 point? And I'm like, it doesn't matter, which kind of actually makes it a little bit more chill, I think. I did have a question about something Sheldon said, which was, you mentioned the word averaging. And it's also very interesting, because all of my students take your class and they have never mentioned that anyone else does specifications grading. So I got to talk to them about that. I wonder if we present it really differently. I don't do averaging. I do averaging for quiz scores, because they kind of minorly affect my course grade. But in order to get, let's say, a B in my class, you have to have an 80% or higher on every single exam. You have to have a B on your term project or your honors project, and there's no averaging. And that's kind of my point of using specifications grading, so that I know, it started when I taught physiology. I know that if someone understands the nervous system and they have absolutely no idea how the cardiovascular system works, I don't think that those have any relation to each other in terms of averaging out. So if I have a student who leaves my class and they have a B in physiology, they should know all the different body systems to a certain level and not compensate for one body system that they kind of don't understand at all for something that they understand really, really well. So I don't average my scores.
That's a great point. So I started averaging this year, in fact. I've been doing specification grading since fall 2020, I guess. I started with my 201 class. Honestly, I started it because my class was online. It was asynchronous. I needed a way that I could run my class asynchronously and still have like a bin thing. And I wanted like there to be just like weekly tasks that students had to fulfill to go through the course. My son was 5 at the time. He was starting kindergarten. So I couldn't be in one place at one time. So it actually made my life a little bit easier to have this grading scheme that then just was like, you know, very checklist based, just for my own personal sanity. And I found when doing that I got a lot of complaints from students that they felt like it was an unreasonable ask to have them hit this value every time. So I started to add on a layer of averaging as well for the different bins. And I honestly agree with you, Julie. So I teach a class that is a wide spectrum of topics. They all build on themselves, but the fact that you understand diffusion in one part and then, you know, next week I'm talking about polymers, those two things are sometimes related, but not always. And I want to be able to assess each one individually. So that's why I actually have the individual homeworks. But for the quizzes, because they're kind of big assessments, and especially this semester, I don't have the ability to give to let them do like massive regrades every time we go through. We just don't have the time to do that. I instead say, okay, well, we'll let them average so that then, like, you know, a slightly lower performance on one doesn't, you know, allows them to kind of demonstrate that they can do it across the board. The average still to get an A in the class is a 90% average on all the quizzes I give, right? So that means you're still doing overall pretty consistent work across the whole class. I feel fairly comfortable with that idea. I totally hear your point, Julie, that honestly, if I have all these different things, I want to be able to assess them. And the checklist part of it should be that I could just check off they've met all these things for all these different modules. And then when I go to do my larger assessment of the class, I could then go back and say, okay, I know these students satisfied this part for diffusion and this part for polymers and this part for crystal structures or whatever the case may be.
I wanted to comment on a thing that Julie said that I'm actually also, well, I'm struggling with. Since what I teach is an ethics class, I don't understand what the difference would be in my own mind between an A minus and an A plus in ethics. It just is not a thing that I can compute in my brain. I just give straight letter grades at the end of the semester with, and one of the goals that I communicated to the students or tried to communicate to the students early on is that this means that a lot of the kind of the more detailed, you know, points that, you know, students tend to try to grub for don't matter at the end, right? Especially given the large number of assignments that I have over the semester, doing poorly in one particular assignment or doing great in another assignment is going to have a relatively trivial impact on your overall grade. The problem is that I never know if I'm communicating this adequately to the students, because I still get students who reflexively ask for, oh, I have an excuse for this assignment, or can I do this one over? Can I get extra time for this one? I can math it out for them, but like my response is, sure, first of all of this is just dropped automatically, so don't really worry about it. But second of all, even if I give you this opportunity, it's going to impact your final grade not at all. I don't know why they're still expending the time and energy and some amount of anguish over trying to get this, but I think it's a deeply built-in reflex at this point. Like, there's some heavy conditioning that we've been doing over the course of their, you know, dozen or so years of education, but I cannot quite break that cycle.
And I think you're right. There is this idea of this traditional grading system. I think students, for the most part, are just familiar with this either point system or this weighted grading system. But you all raise all of these really great points based on not being able to focus on the high performers, because there's so much focus on the middle ground and then the ones that are just not really doing well. And then hybrid specification across the board. Just the sensitivity to that you don't want one error, right? Or one particular assessment to pull down their grades, right? So all you're taking all of that into consideration. I think students know maybe some of that to a certain degree, but it raises the question about, I guess, what are the ways and or what are your methods for introducing specifications grading to your students? Be sure to listen to part two of this episode, where we dive into the next question about specifications grading and so much more. Thanks for listening to On, a reimagined podcast that provides teaching perspectives related to instructors and students with a shift toward how technology and innovation add value to teaching and learning. If you enjoyed part one, please subscribe and continue listening to parts two and three. This podcast is where you can always expect to gain ideas from brilliant guests who will sprinkle their innovative strategies to help you add a little seasoning to your course design.